What up, what up? Antony here, Paulie here. What's up, Paul?
Ant, how's it going? What's up, everyone? How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. What's happening?
Good. You know, just the usual. Just sitting here, steeping. I believe the word is steeping some tea.
You're steeping your tea.
I'm
sucking down some cold brew with a straw.
Yeah. I'm steeping. It's funny, actually, because what you do when you're steeping tea, what I do when I'm steeping tea is I lift the tea bag up and down in inside the tea. So I'm tea bagging with my tea bag, essentially, is what's going on.
I love the visual.
But I wonder if, like, you know the way that you refer to it when you're making tea as steeping? You've heard that word before, I assume, steeping your tea.
Yep.
I wonder, is that the same word that's used for is that the technical word for teabagging, like the sexual act? Like, I fancy a bit of steeping tonight.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Say, hey, man, I'm going to steep you.
I'm going to steep you. Oh, you consider teabagging a punishment. That's interesting. Well, this is a good start. How are you doing, mate? What's going on? What have you been doing?
I've just been doing. Me and my buddy Matt. Matt was on the podcast recently. Starting to do some studio work with him.
Brilliant.
Which is cool. And he's been getting a lot of clients, which is great. And him and Tyler at the Vault Studios in Booton, New Jersey. They're killing it. So that's what I've been up to.
Shout out.
You've been gigging, right?
I've been doing so many gigs this year. As you know, I play in a wedding band. And you know that well because you used to play in there with me.
Yes, sir.
And everything from 2020 got moved to 2021 and to all sorts of days, all sorts of weird days. I had 3 weeks in a row of Fridays and Sundays, but not Saturdays. Here I am on Saturday. We're recording this on a Saturday and I don't have a wedding. So the reason for that is all of the weddings from 2020, obviously, here in the East Coast of New Jersey were cancelled and moved to this year. So it's been since June or July, it's been pretty heavy weather with the weddings. So it's been good. It's been really good to be back playing regularly. Got the calluses back in my fingers.
You guys have been so busy, and I say you guys, that includes Kat and Rich, that we didn't see each other all summer. I saw you maybe twice throughout the summer, but like I didn't see them all summer.
Like non-Zoom seeing each other, like hanging.
But you know, and then we talked about it. So because this is a cool thing that recently you and I had a gig with Kat and Rich.
Yeah, we had a real gig.
It was a gig in it was at a place in the city called the Cutting Room. Mm-hmm. Great stage, and shout out to was his name Gerard? That was his name.
His name was Gerard, and he was great. Yeah,
he was fucking great, dude.
Yeah.
He was so cool, so helpful, and he made the stage sound. Dude, I mean, like honestly, it has been a while since I've played on a stage with such good sound system, with such good monitoring.
I mean, I would say it's definitely it's a battle. The top two. Between that and the lanes and Asbury.
That was incredible too.
Really good. I mean, and Joey at the Asbury Lanes is a great sound guy. Although I think, did we have a female sound engineer that night?
There was who you're talking about, she was running the light show. Do you remember that crazy light show that they have there?
Oh, yeah. That's why I remember. And I can't remember her name. I feel bad about it, but... Those guys at the Asbury Lanes do a really good job, and it's a great venue.
If anybody's in Jersey and wants to see a killer, or near Jersey wants to see a killer like show, go to Asbury Lanes for
so
sure.
So good. So the Cutting Room, I think his name was Gerard.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was, and he was super professional. I mean, and you know what? It's actually weird. One of the things about one of the little foibles about gigging is, I mean, most bands you don't have your own sound engineer. I mean, if you get to a certain level, you do, but you know, the sound engineer is typically working for the venue, and you know, and it's really hit or miss, as you know, Anthony.
Yeah.
You could get a really good sound engineer. I mean, you can get a mix. There's a whole different die of things you could get. You could roll,
of course.
You could roll a really nice guy who doesn't know what he's doing, or you could roll an ass who's gets great sound but is an ass.
Yeah.
And what we ended up rolling on at the cutting room was just like a guy who was just all about his job and kind of you don't know if he's going to be cool or not. And then one of the advantages about our band with sound engineers, which is why we never have really issues with it, is because we're a low volume band.
Yeah.
You know, which is a sound engineer's dream, right?
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think anybody who actually really understands what the state, like the art of making the stage sound good, making the room sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine, cause you know, as a conductor, this is all classical training that I'm picking from my
sure.
memories here, but a conductor, countless conductors have told, you know, the ensemble that I played in, I'd rather, this one conductor said, I'd rather tell you give me more than put up the hand of too much volume wise,
yeah.
dynamic wise.
Yeah, and there's kind of like an ego thing there as well, like especially in that type of situation. You always want to be asked to turn up, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's always like, oh, okay, cool, that's cool. You know, you never really want to be asked to turn down. But then again, I mean, when you're on a stage, you're on a new stage and you're working with an engineer you're not familiar with, like really, you have to trust what they're doing with the front of house sound. So, mm-hmm. you know, being asked to do a certain thing, turn up, turn down, whatever, is...
Yep.
Is very important that you follow those instructions within reason. I mean,
yeah,
you know, but it's like great sound, great gear, and like
great
what
gear.
A really nice sounding stage, a really easy engineer to work with, and a great sounding room. I couldn't compliment it enough from a sound perspective. It was really great.
You want to know something? I'm noticing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've noticed it outside of. New York City, but it seems to be a thing I see in New York City with good stages where they always have some sort of vintage drum kit.
Okay.
In like decent, I mean, really decent condition, considering it's without a doubt over 30 years old, the drums.
Sure.
And there's something to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, all right, like I'm sitting there when we were sound checking. And at one point, there was a lull, and I just, I just feathered the kick, right?
Mm.
And I had this big monitor to my left, and I just felt, like I felt, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable to me, that
mm-hmm.
that guy had that dialed in so much.
Yeah.
That it was that sensitive, you know. But it wasn't, I didn't feel like I was getting... you know, like kicked in the nuts with it kind of thing. Like,
sure.
He might have had a compressor going or something.
Yeah.
And he had he had it EQ'd really nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was, because when you start playing then, you realize like, okay, that's that thing about monitoring, which is
mm-hmm.
hearing it sometimes, like a kick drum, and you as the bass player, you know this as well. Hearing it is not enough to really know, like to feel like you're playing your instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to feel those frequencies and then those vibrations.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, you know, especially if you're a drummer, you want it to sound like. You want the monitor to sound as close to the sound of the real drums as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's like you said, it's one thing to hear it, but you could hear it, but it doesn't sound much like a drum or a kick drum or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, and like, that's also the sign of somebody who knows their gear, knows their monitor system.
Oh, yeah.
Probably has a shit ton of either a really like... high-end digital board or maybe a lot of outboard stuff, where I don't know, maybe he's got 3 or 4 EQ racks for different instruments, and that definitely helps. But the tools are one thing, and knowing how to use them is a completely different other thing. So
I think the warmth is what that was the key thing that I noticed. Mm. The warmth on stage and the warmth in that room, and I think that's why a lot of these rooms choose the vintage drum kits. The way the old way of making shells.
Yeah.
There's something about the warmth that you get from them. You can't get them from the new. You really can't get them from the new kits.
It's funny that you say that, because when you mentioned that a minute ago, first I was thinking maybe it's a sign of the times. It might be a little bit hipster, because a lot of drummers these days are really using, I think a lot of good drummers are using old style drum kits. But do you think if you went back to the late 80s and you went into a venue like the Cutting Room, they would have had like a, 18 piece Tama kit, because that's what was cool back then, to use like a big huge drum kit? You think it's just a sign of the times?
I don't, that's a good question, because we went through that time during the nu metal phase, and even before that, the 90s, right. I think the 80s really spawned the huge how loud kit. Can we get our fucking guitars?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about stacks and shit, right?
Sure.
And that 100% affected the drum manufacturer.
Sure.
And what was called for. So, like, they started producing really thick cymbals, right? There's a whole line of Zildjian cymbals that is like, it's like you could find them and nobody wants them.
They're
called Z Custom, you know,
like, custom.
And they were fucking thick ass bright cymbals, right, that they sound very, very metallic.
Okay.
And the whole point was to pierce through that wall of guitar sound.
Sure. They were given a job to do, and they did it. They were designed for that. Yeah,
That was the only reason for those cymbals, and that's why they don't exist. They are not produced anymore because there's no need for it. I think in-ear monitoring. Mm-hmm. I think also, I think that was a reason to not use those, to use those cymbals.
Sure.
But as far as what you said before, like, because I'm thinking when that was the case, then bigger. Like, I remember the 80s was a big drums, bigger, right?
Physically big drums,
physically punch, and then like punch,
bigger drum,
like attack and punch, because you just have to cut through, they would use. Like, I imagine, Metallica, I imagine Van Halen, Guns N' Roses, like, heavy-sounding bands used snare drums that were just solid metal, just brass.
You think so? Yeah.
Oh,
well, definitely nothing with the color of wood or the subtlety of wood and the...
Yeah.
Like, everything kind of sounded the same, I think, It was like there was a snare sound.
Yeah.
But I also think it's kind of it's a dick thing as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, back then it was a dick thing. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think nowadays it's actually, I think drummers are, but there's more better drummers now,
Oh, yeah.
But I think one of the things that as drumming improved and as your basic drummer got better, I also think one of the great byproducts of that was, I don't need all of this stuff to be good.
I can
do it with a couple of toms, a few cymbals, and it's awesome. But I think it's definitely a sign of the times. I think if I went into a venue now, I think if we walked into the venue with Cat and Rich and we saw like a huge drum kit up there, we would be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Where are we?
Yeah, for real, man.
It's cool though.
Speaking of, back to that gig that we were talking about, we'd have to, it's so funny we mentioned the sound guy first, but we didn't mention the guy who got us the gig, Nick Stefanacci. So shout out to Nick. Nick's a great sax player. He plays with you in the wedding band, right? And he has a show called Pop Filter that we were on. It's sort of like a live podcast slash. Yeah. I would say it's closer to like one of those storyteller sessions. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It was cool.
But with a host.
With a host. I mean, it's taped. It's taped. It's video recorded. You know, Kat sat down, the lead person of the band. And he just went around asking us questions, and it was very chill, and it was relaxed. It was funny.
It was fun, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, maybe we could do like some sort of podcast exchange program and get him on here soon.
Well, cool. I talked about it with him, yeah. And Nick, you guys will hear Nick.
Nick's for sure. Nick actually, I do wedding gigs with Nick, and I'm sure there's plenty of musicians listen to this that work in the wedding arena, like. Applause is very rare in the wedding arena. It's just not. It's not the environment, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe at the end of the night, if you've really rocked it, they'll give you like a big round of applause, and they'll start going one more song or whatever.
Like that's it. That's all you get.
Exactly. Only two times have I ever seen wedding musicians getting like regular rounds of applause. That's when Rich does the Andrea Bocelli song.
Yep.
Always, because he does such a great job of it.
Yep.
And then Nick does this set during dinners at our weddings called Sax on Top. And just without fail, you know, he just gets big rounds of applause. And, you know, we make fun of him for it, but it's definitely a testament to his. Because the thing about it is that he's not just a saxophone player, is he? He's a show guy. He's like a lead saxophone player. That's his thing. And, you know, but Nick was the guy that that invited us in to play the cutting room. And it was fucking great. He did a great job. It's a great podcast. And it was a really fun gig. You know, I really enjoyed it. It was great to play such a great venue, you know. It's fantastic.
He said that because he had done, you know, Rich was on it before.
Mm-hmm.
Just a solo with, you know, the Pop Filter show. And so it was good that, because he told us, Nick told us that we were the first band. So it was almost like, you know, he for him, it was like, I'm glad it was you guys, because I know you guys. Like, it's a lot to have to, what, in an hour? Was it an hour or was it more? I forget. But to run a conversation. And it's so loose. I mean, I know he has questions that he wanted to ask, but as far as like, when are they going to play? What are they going to play? Are they going to play original? I think we improvised a little bit too, which was kind of cool.
We did, yeah.
Dude, fucking. That's another thing we got to mention. Fuck, man. I was blown away. I think you kind of brought this to our attention, because you guys. You, Kat, and Rich came to my place here in my studio just to rehearse, like maybe two nights before.
Yeah.
Because we haven't played together. Like, literally have not played together.
Yeah.
In a year.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because the last time we played together was for when the four of us were on this podcast.
Correct.
And that was last September.
It was definitely 2020. It was probably late summer 2020 for sure.
I think it was last September, and it's just like, holy shit! But but the cool part about that is that I saw you guys a lot in the last year, and it was just because we made it a point to hang out a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was like the first this 20. For me, at least, 2021, 2020 was like the first year that I was pretty much only friends with you guys and not working with you guys, you know.
Sure.
That's cool. That's kind of cool. But as far as now the other part about it is playing together and then performing together on stage. The last time that I performed with you guys on stage was January 2020. I'm pretty sure.
It was like a couple of months before it was at the Asbury Hotel, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
It was, yeah. It's crazy. But you immediately see, okay, well, we know how to play together. Like, because sure. Even on stage, like when we're improvising something, like it's not just a thing where, okay, Anthony creates the beat and then Paul puts a bass line to it and then Rich comes up with a piano chords and then Kat just hums a melody until she finds words. It's not just, it's way deeper than that, man. Mm-hmm. It's what comes out of it. I'm sitting back there and I'm impressed by it. Yeah. And I'm part of it. And I love that we're good at doing that. I love that.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, and this is something that we always talk about when we're just hanging out and we're talking about improvisation, that like improvisation is challenging. Because you don't know what's going to happen. For musicians, it's so challenging for a singer to up with something on the spot. And on last week's gig, it was great. And then she's like started doing this like old school rap type thing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, man.
So I'm really looking forward to hearing how it turned out. But
oh my God. Oh yeah. We'll link you guys to the recording when it comes out. It'll be on video.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think
it'll be out.
I'm not sure what his turnaround time is on it, but hopefully it'll be out soon. I'm excited to hear it, you know. But
oh man, and that's something, you know, that like I was talking to somebody who's a high level performer in entertainment. Okay, this past summer I think, and I was telling her, I was saying like, you know. The thought of doing what she does, like at that level, which is like musicals, she's Broadway, you know.
Okay.
And then on my instrument, for instance, so being like percussion or drums in the pit for you know, like that gives me such anxiety to think about. You have all these notes that you have to hit at that exact moment, and you better not miss any of those notes or else you're fired, you know, like goodbye, see ya, next person. Which I think is pretty accurate.
I mean, like taking Hamilton for an example, like having watched it, not live, but on the movie that they made of the stage show. I completely agree with you. Like it must just be so important because you obviously, it goes without saying, it's not only the music that needs to sound right, but the guys up on stage are completely 100% depending on you hitting something at a certain tempo, at a certain time. Like the dances rely on tempo.
Yep.
And now I know we've got all these like you know, technological advances like in-ear click patches or you know click tracks that I'm sure they use. I mean, I'm pretty sure that
I think they have a conductor though
they have a conductor, but I think for I mean, especially like Hamilton, the conductor is playing piano as well.
Oh, is that right?
He's like, yeah, he's kind of doing like a like almost like a Bill Vivino type thing where he's doing all of the main piano parts.
Okay.
He's doing like the major themes.
Okay.
And he's got another keyboard player, and I think they've got like they've got a little chamber, like I think two cellos, a viola, violin, two violin. Anyway, guitar, bass, percussion. But like if you watch it and you're listening to the show and watching it, you get an appreciation for, exactly what you just said. Every note has to be played.
Yeah, man.
Exactly when it needs to be played. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? There's so much depending on it.
I could sweat just thinking about it. You know? Like, yeah. But the thing is, the reason I brought that up is I told her what we do or even the example of if it were you and me and, you know, another musician that could handle it, if we were told you got to go up on stage and you got to give us 45 minutes of entertainment because you can't play covers, so you got to And if the answer winds up being improvise, pretty much, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I am not sweating at all. Mm-hmm. At all. And I've done this. I've done this type of thing. And that's and she was like, I don't know. She's like, no way. I would never do that. No way. How do you even do that? But that's the thing. So this is the thing about performance versus, I guess, making music, right? Sure. I guess so. There are like classical performers, man. Mm-hmm. They're classical musicians are fucking top notch on their instrument, right? Mm-hmm. And their sight reading skills, of course. You put anything in front of them, boom, right? Mm-hmm. And their chamber ensemble skills are high level as well, right? Yeah. So playing with others, but they need that script, so to speak, right?
Either one of two things happens. Either they need the script or they have rehearsed it to death and they just know it and they play it the exact same way every time.
You know? That's right.
I think it's born out of like just to like intersect there. Sure. You know, like understand where classical music came from, where classical music recitals, performances came from. Like obviously back in the 18th century, 17th century, you didn't have any way of playing music other than, like, you didn't have a record player. You know, obviously, that's dumbass shit. So this is the only way you got to hear music. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the whole point of it is if I want to go to an opera performance in, Vienna, I want it to be, and if it's the same show in Paris, I want it to sound the exact same. So the whole nature of, you know, the way that it was written was, you know, the tempos had to be the same, the notes had to be the same. It was written down, so it was played the exact same way every time. I think when you go into that, I think it's about how that any particular musician is programmed mm-hmm. from when they start playing music and what their inspiration for playing music is. Like if you go to lessons, if you go to piano lessons or violin lessons or classical singing lessons, you're taught follow the notes on the page. Yep. That's how you learn music. And then you have other musicians who are more kind of like me, whereas we learn by ear, we learn by listening to music, we learn by, you know, it's a different thing. You're kind of like a hybrid of both. You can do both, which is cool, which is what I'd prefer to be honest with you. But I find most classical style musicians do struggle to improvise.
Oh yeah,
because it's not because they don't have the ability to improvise. It's that. Yeah. Like even improvising, you have to learn how to do it over a career, you know.
This is that part of musicianship that goes beyond your instrument, and it's that when making music and communicating music, mm-hmm. communicating essentially, really, honestly, you're communicating with other musicians. Contributing, listening, contributing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea of that to those who don't, and that's the other thing, to those who have never had to do it, ever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, dude, I mean, you even as a drummer, you can get away with, you can get away with not having to improvise that much. In sure. If you're doing like lower level, more relaxed jazz ensemble stuff, right? Okay. Tang tang a lang tang a lang chin cha cha cha, right?
Boom boom boom. Yeah.
The bass kind player's rules, jazz, yeah. Right? What's the bass player rule? Is that you have to hit that note?
Yeah.
Right on, like
that on that
on
beat,
that chord or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so. But like, sure, you can improvise around those things, but then it becomes like, it's like, that's what's great about jazz is that you have to really, you have to really take it in and spend time with it to understand it.
Yeah.
To really get it. And it goes beyond, for me, patterns.
Sure.
Between my hands and my feet. Like, it's beyond that. That's just bottom level shit.
Yeah.
And I'm not great at it, by the way. I'm not great at it by any means.
Why do you think improvise? Because when we talk about improvisation and how much we both enjoy doing it, why do you think it's been so limited to jazz? Do you think it's because the way that improvisation is done in jazz is it's really just improvisation on solos, isn't it?
It depends.
Right.
It depends. It's like the further that you start, you get away from classical music.
Mm.
Then the more rules are broken.
Mm.
Right. So, like even the jazz players, even somebody like Charlie Parker was a classical musician in some way, had classical training, you know, like Miles Davis, had classical training. Cause that was what was readily available as far as music education. I think.
Yeah.
Everything was based around classical music and the work was playing an orchestra.
Yeah.
But even big band stuff, right? Big band, you know, if you're playing in the rhythm section, big band, you still have strict rules.
You have to follow the music and follow the conductor.
You can improvise. You're like my left hand on the snare can comp between my snare and my kick can comp some patterns.
Sure.
While holding it, you know, but I have pretty strict rules, man. I have to hit, you know, on the and of three with the trumpets on this one hit.
Mm-hmm.
For me, so that's where like things are written down, and this is like almost like a classical piece. Like for a brass section, they have, just like in an orchestra, they have lines parts that they have to play together, and so then, I think what really wound up happening when it's interesting the beauty of it, but it's still connected. There's still tragedy to it. Mm-hmm. Is that I think when crowds started seeing big bands led by a vocalist,
right,
like a Frank Sinatra type, right.
Mm-hmm.
That changed everything.
I think it was that, but I think it was something else too.
What's that?
It was the nature of people's interaction with the music that was being played for them. Because let's say now it's the audience role in the evening. When you go to a classical concert, the audience role is to sit down and listen.
Oh, true.
And in some instances, for people who are very much into classical or opera, like the same way people are into wine or food or whatever, is to critique. You know, it's a little faster than I'd like it, or it's a little, you know, or they left that part out or whatever. I think the nature of people's interaction with what was being performed for them changed, and what allowed a certain amount of freedom, I think, with the big band thing is because people weren't sitting down listening to it; they were dancing to it.
Yeah.
When they're dancing to something, they're not necessarily paying attention to every note, going, "Ooh, that note was different to the way that this conductor did it." It's more about an organic exchange between the stage and the ballroom, really, the stage and the floor. And I think that allowed, I think, band leaders and conductors probably figured at that stage, hey, this allows us to be a little freer with the music, because nobody's sitting down there going, oh, this is different than that, or that's too fast, or that's too slow. They're just enjoying the music, and it's more organic. And it's, I think that allowed a little bit more improvisation to come in too.
That's a huge, like, that's actually, you know, it's one of those I had to stop and go, yeah, holy shit, you're right. It's all interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why people don't necessarily. That's why they chose, you know, the big band swing music over classical music, or even Broadway. Even I would say, like, or not. That's not. Well, that's interactive. You're following a story.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, I think there was a version of it you know, back in older times, you sure. know, I think back in like the 19th and 18th centuries, there was vaudeville, which was sure. a bit more loose, you know, a bit more kind of for, it was theater for the people type thing. Yep. You know, so I think there was like a version of it then, but I think it's, you know, music and musicians, like when you're on a stage and you're kind of, there's the stage is above people so that everyone mm-hmm. can see you, but it can give you this sort of mentality where you kind of sometimes forget that the entire culture of what you're doing is, for the most part, even determined by the people who you're playing for, not the music that you're playing. You know,
it's true.
So I think that was probably a huge part of it, and then it kind of developed into, you know, because in the 20s and 30s you had a lot of big band stuff, and my 20th century musical history isn't probably as good as yours, but I kind of feel like it almost went away for a while then. Like
what, the big band stuff?
The big band thing, because people yeah. started to do like the Wall of Noise type stuff and the Motown thing, and that's where all the orchestras were playing on.
Yeah, you know? So essentially what happened was, once the crowd started loving showing up for a vocalist versus what they would call I forget the guy's name. He was a clarinetist, but he had like an orchestra, jazz orchestra. Like, it was a big band. They call it an orchestra for whatever reason.
Right.
But it's all instrumental music. It's swing music.
Benny Goodman?
Benny Goodman. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. Once, though, people started showing up more for the vocalist, then they started to take less people on the road. You know, like these yeah. big bands that still existed took less people on the road, essentially. And then eventually... Mm-hmm. That whole idea of, oh, we're taking 30 musicians. Nope, no, we're not. Yeah. we're taking a handful, and then we have our yeah. vocalist, and that's the gig.
And what did the vocalist do again? I mean, if the vocalist is the conduit from the band to the audience, and the audience back to the band, you
it's
know
almost
what I mean?
Like, it's like, I think it's also relatable.
Yeah, because there's somebody talking to you.
I could say those words. I can match that pitch.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Even like.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so those musicians that got fired from those gigs or didn't have work, as tragic as that is, you know, like that's this Harlem Renaissance thing that happened, you know, like they just started, fuck it, let's just, what do we got? We got a rhythm section. Okay. Two horns. Mm-hmm. All right, let's play at this place. And they would play. And they would write tunes, like they would write, or they would even arrange tunes for that small of a whether it was a
so you
a,
had
some sort
the,
of combo.
You had the emergence of the jazz trio, the jazz quartet,
yeah.
things like that. Okay,
and then so then it became more about the instrumentalist. And here's the thing, though, because you said this before, and you're not wrong, right, about. Most of the improvisation is happening with soloing, right? You're right about that. I mean, I think
don't know if I am or not. More of an opinion. I don't really know that much about jazz, so.
Well, you're right in the sense of like majority of the improvisation is focused on the whoever's soloing in that during that form, part of
sure.
the form or whatever. All the other musicians around them are also improvising, but with more strict rules, trying to hold something supportive for that musician to solo over.
Guess who?
Yeah, the bass player, right?
The
yeah.
drummer.
Yeah. Drummer, yeah.
Why is it always us, Anthony?
Well, honestly, dude, I take so much pride in what we do, man.
Yeah, no,
I fucking love it, dude. I fucking love it. Because I think about, like, can you imagine, like, having to deal with the attention that like a vocalist gets after a great performance?
I mean,
I don't want to talk to anybody.
I think that is exactly why you and I went into the instruments. We picked up the instruments that we picked up. Now drummers are a different thing to bass players, because drummers, you will get the odd drummer who's like, you know, like my brother is somebody that I played drums with for a long, long time, and he was definitely a drummer who, he was not like you. He quite liked, you know, he was a very kind of lead part of the thing, like a kind of almost a Keith Moon type situation. But yeah, rhythm section guys, we just, you know, it's exactly what you said. They're the guys that are just like, they do the gig and then they just kind of either stand over by the bar or just kind of go home. You know what I mean? But like, and the reason is, a lot of the time, I mean, unless you're Jacko or something like that, nobody wants to fucking talk to you anyway. Who wants to talk to the bass player?
It's because they don't know. They really don't know what you do. They really don't know.
It's kind of like, yeah, I know you were up there, but I couldn't really hear you, because people think that, you know, they know that they hear the bass, but it's almost on a kind of subconscious level. And like, everyone thinks they can play the drums because they're like, oh, shit and stuff, right?
I love that they think that.
Right? Exactly, yeah.
So, real fast, just to wrap up that improvisation thought.
Mm-hmm.
When you see this idea of a rhythm section playing something supportive for the soloist, they are comping and improvising.
Sure.
Underneath that,
mm-hmm.
Everybody is improvising, and really what's happening is, and you have to see, it's funny, on paper it doesn't sound fascinating, it doesn't sound inviting, but when you see like good jazz musicians do this, oh my god, even for me still, I'm like blown away by it when it's in front of me,
right?
Like, I forgot how good this can, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's, and then really it becomes the same reason why you would go to any other performance, which is there's an energy in this room, and I love this.
Yeah,
I like this feeling. I've been thinking a lot about like our world. We depend on so much machinery and things that are amazing technologies to run our world, right? And it's great, you know, but, and then I think about what we do though. I feel like we make magic.
Sure.
Right? Human magic, right? And like, I'm not taking anything away from that technology, because there's a person who created that technology. Hence they made magic.
Yeah.
They just got to walk away from their, like, their magic now is in a fucking piece of machinery that we all get to. But that, I've been thinking a lot of that, changes your perspective on going through life. Like, wow, man. Because you know what it is, too? So many idiots around us, too. There's so many dumb. Dude, I got cut off and was on the road with the worst drivers this week. And it seems like every week it's getting worse, right? Dude, just today alone, this one woman just did the shittiest thing and then was just like, whatever, gave like the, I don't care. And I'm like, wow, man, you are a sad excuse to be like part of civilization. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
anyway.
So weird. It's so weird that you say that, because it's a bit of an aside, but same thing happened to me today.
Really?
I don't know how many listeners we have in New Jersey, but Somerville Circle. And I always complain about this, and I'm just going to come out and say it, because...
Go for it.
Americans do not know how to use a roundabout, bro. I mean, you just, you know, there's no understanding there whatsoever. And I was going around a circle and I wanted to take an exit, and this person in a car just had really, this person was not a good jazz musician, not a good jazz bass.
Hey, there we go.
Not a good jazz bass player. This person ignored the rules completely. And just as I was, so you can imagine me going around a circle and I'm coming up to my exit, and this person was getting on just before my exit, and they just kept going. And they could see me like blinking, like indicating that I'm getting off. And there was no, and the same thing, like I ended up having to miss my exit, go down the next one, which is the one that this person was getting off at, and they overtook me, and like this person and her passenger just looked down their nose at me, like, and I'm like, you literally nearly caused a fucking enormous accident. So apologies for the dissection.
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay, because you tied it together by making driving on the road sort of parallel jazz.
Yeah.
Right? There is this churning energy of there's a process, there's a protocol, there are these loose rules, but you can, it's not like you're on a railroad track and you can only go this way. You are allowed to make independent choices.
Yeah.
Right? But within those rules, and you have to be a teammate, and your team members are these other fucking idiot car drivers, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you tied that together. Now that you've explained your driving thing, I'll just real fast explain mine, because dude, I was so mad. Oh my god. There's a light, but a lot of traffic to that light, okay? And then there's this side road, residential road. Mm-hmm. This woman has to make a left, right? So instead of waiting for people to just, like, because the light just turned green, she fucking puts her ass, her nose, right into the intersection. And then blocks off this fucking, it's green.
Perfect. Brilliant.
She's blocking off traffic, waiting for cars for her to get in that. And I am honking my horn, dude. I don't do that. But this is like so, you are deliberately being a piece of shit.
But you don't understand that it's her road, Anthony.
Oh, dude.
You're allowed to drive on it, but it's hers.
And you know what killed me? Is that there was this, seemed to be like this nice, easygoing, like, I look like an elderly couple in the car ahead of me, who was Pennsylvania plate. And I was like, that's
not good.
That's not, because if that was a Jersey plate, hopefully, yeah. I would think that, because here's what I was, that whole time I was like, I wish I was in front. I wish I was in the position that the car in front of me, because what I would have done, dude, I would have drove right in front of her, and I just would have went like this. No. And then I would have rolled down my driver's side window, and I just would have went like waving people behind me, like, come on, come on.
Let's
just
go, let's do it.
you stupid asshole.
Yeah.
Back up and wait your turn, you know. And dude, you know what happened? Once she turned, you know what she did? She fucking just goes. And like, I yelled, fuck you, out the window. That's how mad I was at that. And I don't do stuff like that. But it's just like the blatant, I don't give a fuck. So anyway,
and it's actually interesting to watch people's reactions to stuff like that, because, like, look, we all do dumb shit on the road. Like, I'll make a mistake on the road just like anybody else. I'll be like, ah, and I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, ugh, you know. But some people are just, and I think it's, you know, I think it all goes back to, like, almost like programming a drummer or a bass player, or a, you know, a character actor or a lead actor or whatever. It's how you learn. It's how you're taught how to drive.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had to rail against how I was taught out to drive, because somebody taught me how to drive who was an aggressive driver. Okay. And that was their attitude, was, no, it's your road. It's your road. Like,
nah.
I learned to drive on a very, very small island with very narrow roads. And this person told me, it's your road. You go in the middle of the road. You make sure that you're as far over as it's possible to get, so that the other person has to move over for you.
Oh no!
And it's just like such a bad, you know. And I had to relearn almost how to drive when I came to the US, simply because you have to allow for the amount of bad drivers that are, you know. Look, I'm not going to say all Americans are bad drivers, but like, when I got my driving license in the US, I went up the street, I went down the street, I parallel parked a hatchback into a space big enough for a fucking train.
I know.
With 10 carriages. And then I sauntered in. Here's your driver's license. You know, when you get your driver's license back in Europe, it's months. You have to take at least 10 lessons. In Finland, it takes almost 3 years to learn how to drive. You know? So
it's unreal.
And you know, it's right there in the it's right there in the statistics. You know, I mean, and it's sad because, you know, we're angry about it, but like terrible things happen on the road every day, and most of the time, it just comes down to people being fucking stupid assholes, like your friend today. You know.
And you know what, man? I really don't. I don't wish any harm to anybody.
Mm.
But sometimes you think, like, what is going to get this person to understand that you got to pay attention and you have to move with traffic. You can't push your way through it. I honestly think it would take somebody getting into a collision to learn.
Unfortunately,
it's
sad. Most of the time.
It's really sad. And dude, even when you're hit, you had a car accident probably within the last 2 years, right? I think.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you guys got hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a similar collision too, like maybe 2 years ago. Dude, I don't know what speed you were hit at. I was hit maybe the driver was going like 25. It doesn't matter. Like, you are shocked by that impact, and then what happens to you as the shockwave is happening to the car.
I mean, look, it's, yeah, I was hit, my most recent car accident that I was hit in, I was hit at somebody running a stop sign, but not running through it. They stopped at it, didn't see I was coming, and then pulled out. So they were at they were at pull out speed, forgive the phrasing. But so like 10-15 miles an hour, you know. About 10-15 miles an hour, but it doesn't matter. I mean, when you're, I was going 30, maybe 35. I mean, when you're clipped. When you're clipped T-bone style by somebody, it doesn't matter how fast they're going. If you're hit, you're hit.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's it. And it's the shock, and it's the, I mean, one of the, like, you know, we'll get back to music in a minute, but one of the things that I did in my last car accident, we couldn't drive the car back, got an Uber, and then there was another car in the household. And I was like, I'm immediately getting back in that car and driving again. Like, I didn't even go in the house. I was like, I'm taking this car out for a drive for 30 minutes because you have to just go. This is not the norm, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This is not the norm. But I mean, again, just like usual, I mean, when that person T-boned me, like, this person was like giving out to me, what are you doing? Like,
I know,
I don't know, driving on the road, like, going about my day. It's crazy. And I know that there's shock and stuff like that, but...
Yeah, but still.
You know?
And that's why you call the cops. You always call the... You know what? Maybe this is helpful for people who have never been in an accident. Yeah, always call the police. Always, right? As soon as your car is done moving, call the police. Because... And the police, if they're good at their jobs, it will help you tremendously. Because I got, same thing that happened to you about a decade ago, maybe more. The same thing. Woman was at a stop sign. I had the right of way. Pulled out right as, you know, I was driving past. Clipped my back rear. I mean, I was okay. Her and her, like, elderly mother were shooken up. I think the mom hit her mother hit her head or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then she was saying stuff like, you were going so fast, I didn't even see you.
Oh, it's stuff, crazy, you know? Right?
Right. And then I go, and I'm trying to tell her like, you were at a stop sign.
Hmm.
But I looked and you were going so fast. I was like, well, I think the police are going to determine.
Yeah.
And then she knew. She knew. Yeah. She kind of went, oh. She knew. She knew.
Hmm.
Right, and that's the thing, is that like shame, that like that denial of I caused this accident, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a lot for people. Obviously, they know their car insurance is going to be affected by that, what they're paying, and all that other shit.
It's not affected that much. I mean, it's not affected
really?
To the point where no, I mean, it really isn't. I mean, the funny thing about my accident was it ended up costing the person who hit me nothing. And it ended up costing me like $6,000 because I was underwater in my car at the time. You know the way cars are. I mean, cars are not like houses. You buy a house today for $500,000.
Yeah.
If that house is worth and valued at $500,000, you keep the value in the house. You buy a car new, the minute it leaves the lot, it's like a third of the value is gone on it. So okay. You're immediately, any like if you finance your car up to like 80% or like 80% up,
uh-huh.
you're underwater immediately. So it's always going to cost you if you get an accident. But I'm going to swing it back to music here. And
yeah,
the reason
please.
That we're talking about driving is because as musicians, we drive a lot. I want you to give me one time. What was the worst drive to a gig you ever had? Like the one time that sticks out in your head where you were in your car, you were going to a gig or coming back from a gig and you were like, I don't know if this is okay for me to do anymore. I think I might have a heart attack.
Oh, you mean like as far as frustration, dealing with other drivers and stuff like that?
As professional musicians, we spend a lot of time on the road driving.
Oh, you yeah.
Know? When you're not at like a tour, if you're not on tour or whatever and somebody's driving a tour bus, you're usually commuting yourself to and from your gigs.
Yeah, sure.
And there is fucking, you know, there's just times where you remember just, I remember the steering wheel, the windscreen, and thinking, fuck my life.
I remember having a gig with our old, the agency we worked for. I'm pretty sure you were on this gig. The Verrazano Bridge was closed. Dude, it might have been 1 or 2 p.m. on a Saturday.
Oh my goodness.
And that was the only way that Google was telling me to go, mm-hmm. Google Maps or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember going like I lost like 30 minutes because of it. Because I didn't know the area that well. I was in like the Bayonne area, I think.
Right.
And I remember going like, dude, I don't know what to do right now. I don't have much time. And you know, I don't have much time to you and I, responsible musicians, is like
mm-hmm.
I might only have an hour to set up. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we give ourselves...
God, I might only have 3 hours instead of 4 hours.
Exactly. For us, we would rather have like two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no, that was frustrating. There might have been a thing where I recall also driving and like somebody just cutting you off and almost causing an accident, and then the thoughts were just, this is how sad it was. Like, I could have missed the gig and I would have gotten fired. You know what I mean? I would have gotten fired from my rather than just survive a car accident and be mm-hmm. healthy. I was worried about the gig and I was worried about my gear mm-hmm. in the car. You know, I mean,
what would happen to my snare drum? Am I going to get another one of those that sounds exactly like that?
Dude, honestly, and the only other thing to wrap this question up, the only other complaint I usually have as far as driving to gigs is I like driving through the city. And I'm crazy
too,
for that.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. enjoy it. I think it's a
rush. I like
rush,
it too, yeah. Yeah, it's
right?
cool.
It's cool, right? But parking? Fuck mm-hmm. off. No way, dude. That is the most stressful thing is parking. Yeah.
It's not even the city, man.
Perform.
Red Bank, New Jersey, sort your fucking parking out. You know what mine is?
What is yours?
Ladies and gentlemen, there was a time where we had a gig in New York City and I could not get to the gig. Remember that gig in New York where I was like, I can't get to the city. I literally, there was such a bad accident and I was in a particular spot. I was on an on-ramp to the New Jersey Turnpike
mm-hmm.
around the Newark area. I was mm-hmm. on an on-ramp. It was either the park. No, it was the parkway. I was on an on-ramp and the parkway was just as I was getting on, the mm-hmm. parkway closed. There was a truck accident. There was a tractor trailer blocked the entire parkway. The entire parkway going one way was closed. before the next exit. So I was in a situation where I was on the parkway, but the parkway closed, and I literally had to text you guys. Remember that?
I don't remember this. No, I don't.
You don't
remember
that gig, in that original gig in the city with Kat? It was like one of the very first gigs we did with Kat and Rich.
I don't remember. No.
And I literally, I had to text and say, I'm not going to make the gig. It took me like 4.5 hours just to get home. You guys had done the gig and probably were home already, and I wasn't even, you know. Wow. I literally did not get, I was like, I cannot get into the city right now. I can't, it's impossible to get into the city.
Dude, the mood that it just, it'll turn your day upside down. Shit like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, for me, it was weird because it was my first experience of like real New York traffic. Like sometimes in New York, it will take you hours to get 10 miles. It's just because of the amount of people that are here.
Yeah.
And then my other one was far less dynamic, but just as annoying. I don't know. It was one of the last gigs you did with us. We did a gig out in Long Beach Island, LBI, down on the shore.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, Long Beach Island is a very long north to south island. And we had booked it through like this agency, not one that we would usually work with, just a separate. And I went up to the house right at the top of Long Beach Island, actually pulled into the driveway, went, this can't be it. Text somebody, I don't know who it was, and they were like, oh no, it's this, which is like, it's this place, which is way down the south of Long Beach Island. I drove down, and I was like, this can't be right. Like, I've got to go back up. At the end of it, I was in the house already. That's exactly the house that I pulled into, was where it was. But right at the part of the journey where I was like, fuck, it was that place. I've got to drive 45 minutes back up Long Beach Island now. I caught a light, and I had to slam on my brakes. And my guitar was in a hard case in the back, and it was like resting on top of my gear. So I slammed on the brakes. The guitar case literally slid from the back of the car along the top of my gear and whacked me so hard in the fucking back of the head.
Oh no.
And it happened just as I was already really fucking annoyed. Like,
oh my God.
And I literally screamed. I was like, fuck this fucking shit, I'm fucking
oh god, dude.
It was just like crack. I think it was like I saw lights. Like it hit me that hard. But it was like the frustration of nearly getting in a fucking accident because I nearly ran a red light to you know, being pissed off because, I mean, it was nobody in the band's fault. It was the agency
that
we were working for. Yeah.
I remember this. Yeah, I remember that.
Had given us shitty directions because they don't give a fuck.
They don't care.
And then, like, just the guitar just... And it was my Warwick guitar. You know that big wood Warwick, which is heavy? Yep. It's fucking heavy, dude. Uh-huh. And the corner of the fucking hard case went boom, boom, right. And I was like, I fucking give up. I quit. But
yeah,
anyway,
that's one of those...
Yeah.
I quit. If this... Because your mind just goes, if this is what this is going to be like for the rest of time... No
and
way.
The thing is, there was already kind of a thing about that day, because that was the day, remember, Rich had no voice. He had laryngitis, or lead singer had no voice. He had, he could, remember, it was that gig where it was in the huge house right on the water.
Yep, I remember that.
So those are two of my, like, driving, like, I mean, I'm sure every single musician that listens to this podcast can kind of go, hey, yeah, I remember that one time where, you know, this happened. It's the fucking worst. But that's you know, it's part of being a musician, like getting in your car and driving for, you know, I don't know, were you on the Delaware Saturday, upstate New York Sunday fucking weekend? I think you were, right? You totally were.
Was it one where we had to like do an afternoon one and then drive fucking like...
No, that was a double that we did. This was remember we played Delaware on the Saturday night.
I mean, I honestly, I probably did it. I just don't remember.
You fucking tell you why you don't remember, because you blocked it out.
Yeah, you blocked it out. Yeah.
It was literally like, oh, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put this band. And this wasn't like, we were on request. We were working with an agency. It's the best thing to do with this band is to put them in Delaware on a, I think it was a Friday. And let's put them in upstate New York, which is the entire other fucking direction. Let's do that the next day. That'll be better for them, I think. It was like, you know, fucking. So it's a lot of driving, and it's a lot of, and of course the thing about it is, the more time you spend driving, the more time you spend on the road, the more chances there are for misadventure. So,
but you know what though, I will say this. I think something that we look on that gig that we did at the cutting room.
Yeah,
we as a band experienced some shitty. Interaction from let's just say other musicians that were performing after us.
And
we don't even need to go into detail about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as we were allotted a performance time, and mm-hmm. within that time there's time to set up and sound check.
It's built in.
You do your performance, mm-hmm. and then there's time to break down and get off stage,
mm-hmm.
and these other musicians did not wait for us to get off stage. It's like as soon as we were like, "Good night, everybody," whatever, they stepped up on stage and started mm-hmm. fucking setting up their gear. And like, it was. And look, man, you and I've been playing a long time, and you've been playing longer than I have. You've mm-hmm. probably gigged way more than I have, and that's something that stuck out to me, because I've seen that before, but these guys were just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, it's my turn. I don't care if you're done moving.
Any non-musician listeners, it's etiquette. It's gig etiquette that you allow. If you're following a band, the band before you should be allowed to remove their gear from the stage before you even set foot on the stage. You can put your gear to the side of the stage and be ready to get on. A lot of the time, if you're doing like a festival or when you're on a bill and you're right in the middle of it, you have to be, you know, in order for the evening to run smoothly, you have to be ready to go.
Yeah.
But you never ever set foot on that stage until the other band is completely done.
That's right.
Now, you may be in a situation where the stage is like, it's large enough where, like, if I'm the bass player just has a cable and maybe one pedal and he's off. Maybe if everyone else on the stage is setting up on the other side, maybe I can sneak on my side and plug mm-hmm. in if I need to. But even then, even in situations like that, if the bass player is done and my side of the stage is clear, I will not set foot on that stage until every single person and piece of equipment from the previous band is off stage. It's polite. It's manners. And it's, but you learn that from being a musician for so long. That's where you learn it.
But these guys,
I was a little shocked. It's my first time coming. So these guys, essentially, we finished. We signed off. Before people stopped clapping, these guys were up on the stage, and we were trying to get our gear down, and they were setting up around us. And then this particular thing that we were playing the cutting room for had a visual aspect, and one of the things that they wanted to do was get a few photographs of us on the stage.
Yeah, it's which, a nice by shot. The way, it took 3 minutes, maybe. Right?
Literally less.
Yeah,
and one of these guys had a fucking issue with it. I mean, I thought it was hilarious that the sound man called the band name the wrong name. That was pretty...
From now on, my reaction to things like that is I immediately just... I'm not giving attention to this. These guys are acting like we're not here, so I'm not... I'm acting like they're not here. So I just stopped... And this is what I mean. You're telling me things that I didn't even... So... Somebody commented on this, on what we were doing.
I don't know exactly what happened. I was on the other side of the stage and I couldn't hear.
Okay.
And I took the same. I mean, I knew it was happening, but like my setup situation that night was I didn't use any effects pedals, so I literally I kept my bass strapped around my neck and I pulled my cable out. I muted my amp. the house amp. I pulled my cable out. I walked off the stage. So I wasn't part of the, I wasn't part of that whole. I was gone off the stage by the time that they were done. But
okay,
you know, one of like. We have a singer who has a acoustic guitar. You have a, you're a drummer and you brought your own cymbals. And yeah. We have a keyboard player who a keyboard takes a little bit of time to take down.
Yeah.
Because you need to plug it out. You need to put the pedal away. You need to disassemble the stand. And it takes a few minutes to do it. And also, this is your gear. You want to be careful with it. I mean, you know, we're lucky enough that we have good stuff and we want it to stay good, you know.
Yeah.
So you're careful with how you do it and all the rest of it. And, you know, I was on the side and I was like, I was sort of paying attention to it, but paying attention from the point of view of let's make sure that these guys aren't such big assholes that it kicks off.
Oh, yeah, but, that's true.
So it kind of, the guys in the following band were already annoyed because we were on their stage for the or a lot of time and they wanted what they want and they wanted it now and that's it. So the sound man made an announcement that, oh, thank you very much, Callan and band, and, you know, we're going to have a short break to sound check and the next band will be, and I can't remember the name of the band, but the sound engineer pronounced it incorrectly and the bass player went, it's fucking this. It's like...
But that happened, right? That happened like...
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, right? That happened. That announcement happened. We were already minutes off stage.
Yeah.
So like, that's yeah. like to give an example of that's how much time.
Yeah.
That's how not urgent it was.
Yeah.
For them to get on stage.
Literally, I remember because I have it in my mind's eye. The bass player was already crouching down, setting up his pedals by the time the sound engineer made that announcement. So you think about how quickly that would have happened. Like,
yeah.
He gave me zero time. Luckily, I didn't have any like complicated setup or anything like that. But, then the photographer came up and was like, oh, can we get a picture? And literally, like, I think there was a tiny bit of an argument on stage between members. I wasn't involved in it. But,
yeah, I wasn't. Yeah.
You know, it was a very, very professional, hey, can you give us a minute to get off the stage?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, before you start setting up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
the photographer, and I said, can you just give us 30 seconds? I mean, it literally took 30 seconds. You know, I mean, how long does it take you to put your blue steel face on, Anthony? Literally like 5 seconds for a photograph, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, look, here's the thing. If you're thinking about being a musician or if you're learning to be a musician and you are going to be going out gigging or if you're going to be teaching your kids how to play or if you want your kids to learn how to play, it doesn't matter how good you are. Wait for the fucking band before you to get off the stage before you set up. It's just not nice. It's not nice.
Your own benefit. It's in your own benefit and your band, the band that you're playing with. It's in your benefit because that's a representation of your band.
Yeah.
And like even the sound guy has to kind of do some sort of mental transition before the next band. There needs to be time to like reset.
Hey, you know what? People go to the bathroom.
People, yeah, exactly.
Like maybe I want to go get a drink. Maybe the sound man wants to go, you know, smoke a cigarette or something like that. Basically, what it's like is imagine yourself in New York City. You're in a taxi. Your taxi pulls up to your destination. You're paying the taxi driver, and somebody else gets in, and is like, "Come on, I need to go."
That's like trying to get out of an. It was like trying to get out of an elevator while people are like four people are trying to come in. You're like,
yeah.
You mind if I get out?
Yeah. imagine you're starring in a pornographic movie and it's a gangbang scene.
I'm listening. I'm kidding. Yeah.
So that was another part of the experience, right? Of the gig. It was kind of, I mean, you know, when things like that happen, Anthony, you would think, oh man, that must have ruined it. It didn't ruin it. What it did is it reminded me how lucky I am to be playing with musicians like you guys and not musicians like that.
Yeah, because shit that's like that sticks out so much. And But and that's kind of why the reason why I brought that up, and it's a perfect segue from all that traffic shit that we were talking about and drivers and shit like that, is that's there. I think of that as the same thing as what you see on the road, and the sort of just a you have to be in a state of mind that, like, yeah, there are so many people around you on this earth, in this country, in this state, and you know, in your county, town, city, and yeah, many of them fucking assholes. They don't care about you. They only care about themselves.
Yeah.
In fact, they're probably struggling so hard that they don't even understand, right? So, but like, I don't remember traffic that I was in that really. Yeah. I like all those gigs that you were talking about. I don't really remember the drive to them being
okay.
Like there are very loose memories of actual gigs that I remember the drive to, and some sort of, oh, there was this traffic or whatever. Anytime I'm in traffic, I don't really remember it. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one in the world, but I always remember, like, when I got to the event, you know, wherever I was going to, oh, that was so cool. I'm so glad we, you know,
yeah, I mean,
and these guys are exactly that traffic.
Yeah,
they were a part of getting home, or whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like getting off stage. All right, because we're gonna run into that again.
Well, I mean, look. Here's the thing. I mean, the only reason to behave like that is what they expect is yes sir, sorry sir, let me move my stuff for you sir. That's what they expect. That's what they think is, because it's like an alpha thing, right? It's, you know, you're on my spot, you're on my stage, me first, you know. But I agree with you. Like I said, I mean, what I took away from that is, well, thank God I'm not playing with that band.
Oh,
thank
God
I am playing with this band. Because I would be, if I was like the singer or something in that band, I would be like,
yeah,
guys, you're embarrassing me.
Listen,
you're embarrassing yourselves. And you're
when
embarrassing
you come
me.
Up on stage with that type of urgency, because that's like one of the first things I thought of when I suppose, and I started like observing this one cat.
Yeah.
You know, this one dude, like, yo, you are nervous, man. You're anxious.
Yeah, chill out. Enjoy it.
Chill the fuck out. And like, and that also tells me a little bit of like, what you know, your perspective, it's like your perspective of this is the biggest gig opportunity of your life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get set up right. That shows me a lack of professionalism, a lack of experience. I immediately knew, like, we're not dealing with somebody. This is somebody who has to learn.
Yeah, they're still in that kind of formative stage of, you know, being a musician. And hopefully, you know, hopefully somebody with some clout turns around to them at some stage and says, "Hey, you know what? You gotta adjust your behavior there, because it's not how things are done in this industry." But we'll see. I mean, we won't see, because we'll never see him again. But whatever.
And that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. If that was a good interaction, like if they were like, hey, you know, they don't even have to like the music, but they could say something to you, the bass player, like, hey, man, I love the way that bass sounds, and I love your tone.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have, when somebody could have said to Kat, like, love the quality of your voice and all of your vocals. The harmonies are so good.
Mm-hmm.
We would remember them.
Exactly. We'd remember the band name we would have shouted at the engineer with them. Yeah, hey, this band is called this.
Yeah, yeah. We'd be like, yeah, you know, wrong name, but wrong pronunciation. We would remember them. We probably would have connected them via social media. Like, it would have been a thing of, if you run into them again, like, holy shit, what's up?
Exactly.
And that's like the best. That's the exciting part about being positive. Go ahead.
I'm gonna take it one step further for you.
Go ahead.
What were we there for? We were there to record a podcast. If those had been really fucking nice guys, and they had gone up to Nick and said, "Hey, what were you doing here, man? What were you doing?" Nick could have went, "Hey, I'm looking for more bands to have on my fucking podcast. Why don't you guys come on?"
That's true. That's true.
It's just, that's how these things work. And you never know. Like, if I had walked in, if the roles had been reversed, I would have been sitting there going, this is interesting. I wonder if we could get on this. And you know, you know for a fact with Kat and Rich's business acumen for this industry, you know that they would have taken advantage of that and at least asked, hey, you know, is there any chance, like, can I get your email so we can reach out to you? We'd like to send you some music and maybe we can be on here. Like, that's an opportunity missed by that group of guys because of their egos and because of their impatience and, you know, so, like, that to me is the most glaring thing. I mean, you know, musicians come, musicians go, but, like, clearly there was something being recorded. Clearly this was, like, a podcast or a recorded performance. You know, they could have just made such a better impression. We could have hung, had a drink, and they could have gotten to know Nick and us, and they could have been on the podcast next.
And you know what? Even I think about even beyond that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I really think about it, I only think of two of those cats that had an issue, like that showed that negative attitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there were like five people on stage by the time we were about to walk out of the place and they were doing their sound check. There was a good five or six people on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those two cats represent those other five or three or four people. I didn't even care to pay attention at all. So point is the drummer of that band or the bass player, whatever, whoever from that band probably were cool. Might have been actually like cool.
The bass player was the guy that was being the dick. Like,
okay, the bass player was being the dick. Okay, so maybe the singer was cool. Maybe the guitarist, the drummer was cool.
I misspoke. Sorry if that band is listening to this podcast. It was actually one of the guitar players. The bass player was
Whatever, though.
Who cares? Exactly.
You know, like there could have been somebody actually pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
And they're represented by that fucking shitty attitude. And you know, and that's even a good thing to hear is, you know, you might be in a good situation with your band.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we sound good. You're rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go and gig.
Mm.
You learn a lot about the people you're playing with more when they're in the when they're doing that professional stuff. So, like, I remember being in a band a decade ago. Got a gig in Philly, and it's like now. The gig would be now on a Saturday night. I would actually be at the venue by now, probably, or on the road there. And like a few hours, you know, maybe 2 o'clock in the that afternoon, maybe. Hey, we're not going to the gig tonight.
Mm.
From like the singer or whatever. It's like, why? Oh, I'm really hungover and I just can't stop puking or something like along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just call the place and just straight up like leave them hanging. And I remember being really disappointed by that.
Mm-hmm.
Going like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't, like, part of this is get yourself together, man. Like, why are you getting plastered the night before you have a gig? What are you doing? And then, like, that could have been a cool experience, you know? Like, I don't think I've ever gigged in Philly, and that to this day. And you know, that could have been
Philly.
A cool thing.
I can't remember the name of the street, but it's the street where all the bars are on.
Mm-hmm.
9th Street? 2nd Street? Something. I don't know. It's the best-smelling street. It's all, like, cheesesteak places, and it's just smell of meat. Oh, it was so nice.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, the other thing is, for me, just going back to that band, and I hear what you're saying about just your attitude to gigging. Like, I was like, oh, well, another band on after us. I mean, if they're starting, I'll hang for a couple of songs, see what they're like. As soon as they started behaving like that, I did not give a shit.
Exactly.
They could have been the best musicians in the world. I now don't care. Yeah. I don't care anymore because of who you are.
Yeah.
And how you represent. Now, saying that, we've all had bad days. We've all had bad days. God knows I've had bad days on stage where I'm just like super sensitive or just like touchy or just pushy or whatever. I get it. But my overriding vibe is one of openness and being polite, you know. Even if I'm not in a great mood, I'm polite. Especially, sure. You know, I mean, we take the piss out of each other and we know each other, we're friends. If I'm around a stranger, like, no matter how bad your day is, you just try to keep it together around those people and be nice, you know. It was pretty sad. I would say it was sad situation. Gladly not one that I would say it was the exception. I would say most musicians that we've come across in our travels have been, and even going way back to my 20s, you know, playing in the UK and Europe, most people are, you know, fucking ace. You know, they just get it and that's it. You know,
we've had plenty of positive experiences with other artists.
They far outweigh the bad, I would say, definitely. You know, because it's a community, man. It's not, you know, I mean, you look at even football players, they go out there, they bash each other's heads in every Sunday, but they respect each other. They, you know, you have to do it, you know.
And I think what we're talking about, and this is something I'm very against in what we do, and maybe this is not a great thing 100%, but I hate competition. And that's an example of competition. You actually don't care about the other band at all, because that's your stage now. They need to leave, you know. We share this shit, man. We fucking share this shit, dude. We're lucky to have it. We're lucky to have a venue with such a good sound system and a great sound man.
Yeah,
like, we're lucky to have it. Why are we competing for it? I don't know. That to me makes no sense in music. Competition in music.
Yeah.
Why?
I agree with you. I never understood it. And like, I was never into like Battle of the Bands, or I was never into like that whole environment of, you know, hierarchy. I mean, look, it's so subjective that, you know, like, you look at a band like the Pixies, who I love. They're all okay musicians. They're not great, you know, but I really like them. I prefer to listen to the Pixies than Rush.
Sure.
You know, because, yes, Rush are technically brilliant, but I don't find their music very interesting. So there's no best. There's no better. There's no... It's all about preference and taste and what you want, what you want to listen to. So, you know, but I agree with you. Like, and I know that is something that I've heard you saying and Rich saying a lot. I agree. There's no room for competition in music. We're all in the same community. We're all trying to do the same thing, and you know,
it's true, man.
It's easier for all of us if we help each other rather than hinder each other.
And you know, to like source something special that happened with this past Summer Olympics, which I didn't watch, and I never watched the Olympics. I always regret it afterwards, because it's like, oh, I really, people were talking about it, and it seemed exciting. But the one thing I did see was, I think it was like Italy and another, I forget what other country, but it was, maybe was it track or something, whatever it was.
They shared the gold medal.
Mm-hmm. They looked at each other, was like, why don't we, the one guy was just like, do you want to both?
Yeah.
Something like that. And
he couldn't believe it. The guy said it to the Italian guy, and the Italian guy was like, are you serious?
Yeah. I mean,
and he was like, yeah, let's share it. Yeah.
And you know what's funny is like, I wonder if this guy saw the same thing that I see. And the idea of the power of I won, right? Versus we won.
Yeah.
And like the power of these two beautiful human beings who are in competition.
Yeah, naturally.
Just tearing down that fucking... Yeah. Lines of competition, saying, oh, "No, let's share this."
Yeah, because you know,
making
what,
magic.
You know what it is? It's about their sport. Like they understand that their sport has given them this great life. That has given them this opportunity to be Olympians. Like, what can I do to give back to my sport?
Yeah.
And that gesture, like, you see people like helping people to finish races. Like, that's why people watch sports. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why people... And music is our sport. And we need to make sure that it's... And playing live again, as a subsection of music, that's our sport. And we need to make sure that we, you know, are supporting each other instead of trying to tear each other down and be assholes, you know?
Yeah, it's totally, true, man.
It's true, you know?
It's true. And so on that note, let's wrap it up. And I want to promote our buddy Rich for a second here. So Rich has a show coming up in New Jersey. If you live in New Jersey or near New Jersey, he has a show called Under the Impression. And so it's a music and comedy show, and it's wonderful. We saw it, I think he did it 2 years ago. He did his first impressionable show. It's very entertaining. And I'm biased because he's my friend. You know, we're buddies with him. But truly I was impressed. Hey. I was like, holy shit.
Hey.
You know, I was like, holy shit, man. Like, he's very funny.
Yeah.
And that, you know, his musical ability alone is enough to entertain you for sure. And wow you too. So it's on October 23rd. Mm-hmm. It's at 8 p.m. And it's, you can get tickets. I'm going to put the link in the description. If you're in the area, please go check it out. We should have Rich on the podcast.
I'll be at the show. I'll be at the show
as well too. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. So anything else, Paul?
You know what we should do at the show? We should set up like, you know, in Dodgeball where they have the commentators.
Oh yeah. Good call.
You're right. You know, it's a battle between two teams. There's going to be a winner. There's going to be a loser. You know what I think is going to happen tonight? There's going to be some impressions, and you know they're going to be. It's going to be somebody pretending to be somebody else. That's what I think we're going to get tonight.
I love it, man.
I'm going to be there on the 23rd. The last one was incredible, so definitely people.
Oh yeah, man.
It's you know what? It's like it's good entertainment. It's really an entertaining show, and it's funny and fascinating, the things that somebody can do with their voice, and it's brilliant. It's fantastic.
And he's, you know, he's one of those musicians. He's so good at what he does, especially on that damn keyboard, man. You don't even realize what he's doing at the same time as singing mm-hmm. so well and playing piano, but also like cueing sounds and all that, just doing all that. And then also being, why don't you be funny at the same time?
Yeah. And like the other thing as well is like on another note, like, guys, we didn't have this for a fucking year.
That's true.
It's coming back now. Get out there and fucking see it. Get out there and enjoy all of the talent. You know, get out and watch the sports. Go to the art galleries and go to the like local theater shows like this, and you'll enjoy it. You'll love it. It's great. It's great crack.
It's fucking great. It's gonna be a great show. So shout out to Rich. Shout out to Nick Stefanacci. Thanks for having us on Pop Filter. We will link. Eventually, we'll link you to that recording once it's out and released. And then, anything else, Paul?
Shout out to Gerard at the Cutting Room.
Gerard at the Cutting Room. Yeah,
he was a badass. If you're ever in the Cutting Room doing a gig, tell him the two guys,
the Irish guy, and the Guinea,
and the guy with the head. Yeah, the guy with the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, man. It's cool. But this was great. This was a nice, just rambly chat.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And we'll be back again soon. Hopefully with some guests next time.
Yes, I think so. Be great, man. Cool, man. Right. All right, everybody. Paul, badum biz to you and badum biz to everybody in the world. See ya.